Shabbat Shalom. Please join me with the Ana Bekoach. Ana Bekoach, Gedulat Shemimcha, Tati Tzerura. Aleph Bet Gimel, Yud Tav Tzadi. Kabel rinat amcha sagvenu taharenu nora kufre shayim sintet nun na gibor dor sheichutcha Shamrem Ungimel Dalid Yud Kaf Shin. This is the verse for the month of Nisan. And the two letters for the month are the Dalid, which has two meanings. One is doorway or a door, and one being poor, in lack. The Dalid created the planet Ma'adim, the planet of war. And the He, which is composed of a Dalid and a Yud. The Yud represents the 10 spherot of fulfillment, which fulfills the lack that the Dalid has. The He is the letter that created the constellation Taleh, which is a lamb, actually a female ram, a female lamb. Farhem tacharem rachamei sitkatcha tamid gamlem betet resh tzaditav gimel. Chasim kadosh berov tuvcha na'el adatach. Chet kuf bet, chet nun ayin. Yachid ge'er lamcha p'nei zokrei Kedushatach Yud Gimel Lamed Pei Zayin Kuf Shavatenu Kabel Ushma Tziakatenu Yodea Talumot Shin Kuf Vav Tzadi Yud Tav. And the last line, which we say in a whisper, which we refer to as silently, but I will say it out loud for the purposes of teaching. Baruch Shem Kivod Malchuto Leolam Vaed. I'm going to set the controls so that everybody can be heard. Before we go into the Zohar tonight, in the portion of Vayikra, are there any questions? To unmute yourself, press star 6.
Hi, Chodnuk. It's Susie.
How are you, Susie?
And Rick. Okay, I guess. I'm still emotional. I have some questions, but it's on the 12 days because I couldn't get... I went to that website and I couldn't get through or whatever. I don't know. So maybe at the end you can tell me about that, or...
Well, what's your question? You weren't able to get to it, but...
My question is I guess it's a ritual associated with the teachings of Ari?
Yes.
To the Nisan, and I couldn't get the link. I came up with an astrology thing because I didn't do all of the codes because I did all of the codes that you told me to do on this email, and I couldn't come up with it. It said page, can't get to page, so.
Okay. Well, I apologize. But if you cut and paste, because I did it earlier today, if you go back to the email, and there's a link that's written in the parentheses right under the link, and if you can paste that into a browser without parentheses.
Will you do me a favor then? Send it to me again? Because then after what I did was after I was cleaning out my email, and what I did was I deleted it after I printed it.
Okay. Well, you can type it in as well, but I'll send you the link to later today, or send me an email asking you for it.
Okay, because I typed it in and it didn't work, so I ended up with astrology.
The idea of each of the 12 days is there's a connection between the first 12 days of Nisan, one of the other names for the month of Nisan is the Kodesh Aviv, the month of Aviv, which means spring. But when you look at the letters that make up the word Aviv, it actually spells Aleph Bet, Yud Bet. And Aleph Bet is the word father, Av. And Yud Bet is the number 12. So it's explaining that the month of Nisan is actually the father of all 12 months, that it's the cause of all 12 months, and therefore there's a link between the first 12 days, each of the first 12 days, and the months of the year. And by following this ritual, which is to read a certain series of verses from the portion of Naso, in which the dedication to the Mishkan in the desert was done by the heads of the tribe at that time, and the heads of the tribes, each tribe represents and connects to one of the months of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And why Jacob had 12 sons to connect to the astrology. And literally, by this ritual and the meditation on the letters associated with each month from the Sefer Yetzirah, you can take control of the astrological sign of that month, and therefore accept the positivity and eliminate the negativity. And it seems like such a simple ritual, and many people think that, you know, it really doesn't work, but in my experience it does, and that's why I teach, don't ever believe a word I say, but test it for yourself. Because the whole essence of Kabbalah is an experience. You need to experience what it's teaching you. It's not something proven to anybody. And I'm not here to prove to you that this works. Test it for yourself.
So it's read by out of the book of Dasko?
It's called the Sefer Yetzirah. The Book of Formation. The Book of Formation, tradition teaches, was written by Abraham the Patriarch.
Okay, I have the Book of Creation. I have
no,
the book.
Creation is something else.
Okay.
The Book of Formation is, as I said, the tradition teaches that this was written by Abraham. And it was written by him. There were 400 chapters in the book he wrote, according to a verse in the Talmud. And it was written as a book of outreach to the people of his generation, explaining and teaching them how to connect spiritually with the one God. He lived in a generation that worshipped many gods. They were spiritually elevated, and he did Avodah Zarah, idol worship. They had forgotten that Hashem is the source. And so they would worship a tree. And they lived in a time when the angel of that tree was given permission to to give them energy for worshiping it. And so people were confused spiritually and forgot to thank Hashem when they thanked the tree or the for the fruit that it fed them or any of this whole approach. But the Sefer Yetzirah originally was 400 chapters, according to the tradition. The book we have today, which tradition teaches was codified by Rabbi Akiva, is only 6 chapters long.
Okay.
And to the other 394 chapters, it's lost. There's never disappearance in spirituality. The information is available throughout the Talmud. It's available throughout the writings of the various over the centuries in a format that is simple to understand. And so, in essence, it's fairly well lost. The essence of the 6 chapters is sufficient to give you and teach you how to experience God, which is what ultimately the goal of every human being is, to get closer to God. But how you do that is not through intellect, and it's not through emotion, but it's in a balanced way with both of those. And it's by expanding your consciousness to reach into those spiritual worlds, making the connection in the spiritual world while you're living in the physical world. And that's what ultimately the Mekubalim do in their meditations. And that's ultimately what is taught as part of what Kabbalah teaches.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Are there any other questions?
Yes, Hanok. I'm curious. Last night, I believe you mentioned something to the effect of that Hashem lied to, was it Jacob, Yaakov?
No, he lied to Abraham.
Abraham? Okay, and what do you mean?
Well, if you go read the verses that describe, it's in the portion of Lech Lecha, where Hashem comes to Abraham to tell him a number of things. There are 3 men who come, but before those 3 men come, which the tradition teaches that those 3 men were angels, one came to heal Abraham from his circumcision. One came to rescue Lot from the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah. And the 3rd came to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah. To those 3 men being visible in the desert, Abraham was communing and conversing and talking with God, which is part of the meditation techniques that are taught. And when he was speaking with God, God was saying that next year, Sarah was going to bear a child. And Sarah laughed. And what she said, and under her breath, politely, being, you know, I'm not going to attack women for this, but Sarah was listening to the conversation at the tent. Well, was it a physical conversation? How could she be listening to it if it was a meditation? But if you understand the concept of one soul, that male and female actually represent one soul, and if you have raised your consciousness sufficiently where you can cross over and cross back, which is the level of Abraham, the Ivri, and Ivri means to cross over, Sarah and Abraham would commune, would meditate, and be in the same spiritual world at the same time, listening to the same conversations. And so Sarah laughed at this idea that Abraham could still get an erection at the age of 100. $4.99. And Abraham said to God, what did she say? And God said she was laughing at the thought of her getting pregnant at the age of 90. These are information from Midrashim. And that's where we have the idea that God lied to Abraham. But why did he lie to Abraham? He obviously didn't want Abraham to be upset that his wife might make a comment like that. And from general experience of female conversations and male conversations about sex, female conversations tend to be much more blatant and open. And men are very embarrassed by the discussion of whether they can still get an erection or not, as from what I'm told. I hope that answered your question.
It seems to me that it was more Hashem being considerate and careful about how he presented it rather than lying. And so knowing that Hashem hates lies, I couldn't wrap my arms around that statement, and I knew there was more to it, and I thought maybe that it was going to go into rabbinic halakha, but
no.
I appreciate your explanation. It just seemed like a very harsh thing for and very against what Hashem stands for him to actually lie, and so I just had to ask the question.
I understand the question, and we all struggle with the concept. On its flat surface, as the story goes, as you read it in the Torah, Sarah said, "How he can't get it up," and God said, she was laughing that she could get pregnant at the age of 90. So is that what Sarah said? So let's judge.
Well, we all know the process, so.
Yeah, but let's judge people. Let's judge Chas V'Shalom, judge God in a way that is, less harsh. Maybe that's what God heard her say. And he was reporting accurately, because somebody makes a sentence and four people will hear that sentence totally differently, each of them in their own way. So maybe God didn't lie. But my understanding of the story is that God does lie in this very limited effect, that in order to maintain shalom bayit, to keep peace in the house, between a husband and a wife, that white lies are allowed to be said. One of the questions that I asked my 10-year-old students, one of the subjects that I teach is the Eser Dibrot to them. And we go through all 10 Eser Dibrot, and after they have an understanding of all 10, I ask the question, where is it written in the Eser Dibrot that it's not okay to lie? And I hear silence from you people as well, just to give you an idea. It's not written anywhere specifically that it's...
It's not put in those specific words.
It says, do not steal. Why doesn't it say, do not lie? Why is...
Well, it says, don't bear false witness. It says, don't...
It says, don't bear false witness with a vow. It doesn't say, do not lie. It's a very narrow aspect, or very broad. I'm not disagreeing with the potential. We know that spiritually, we need to have our external aspect be in sync and in equivalency with our internal aspect. So when we smile at someone that internally we are angry, is a wrong thing to do spiritually. That is a lie. And so are we supposed to, tell the person that we're angry at him? Are we, these are the questions that we need to resolve. When is it appropriate to do this? And we learn from studying the story of Abraham that when it comes to shalom bayit, peace in the home, it's okay to do a small lie. It's not okay to do a lie in other places, in other causes. It's not okay to commit adultery and then come home and lie to your wife. That's not a white lie. But where is the range of what's acceptable and what's not? That's a whole discussion of halakha, which I am not an expert at.
Okay, well, I appreciate that, and I thank you for clarifying it as much as you did. I knew that there wasn't that strong, harsh, okay, God lies. It had to have something more to it. And I know that there's a broad base for rabbinic halakha concerning white lies, and I haven't studied it through completely, and I really want to now. So I very, very much to prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that Hashem doesn't lie, because in my heart I know that's the truth. So anyway, thank you very much.
Can I add something?
Of course.
The thing is I agree with her, because the thing is if you look at the statement, Hashem really didn't lie, because the thing is getting it up and getting her pregnant are basically the same thing, because you've got to do that to get the end result, right?
That is the assumption.
So the thing is I don't think he lied. And this is putting God in a human form, and he is not a human.
Well, let's eliminate
the physical, it's just...
Let's eliminate God in this discussion, and we'll talk about the two incidents in Abraham's life where he goes down to Egypt and he says to Sarah, I'm going to tell them that you're my sister. Please back me up. And the rabbis explain that by saying, well, they had the same father but different mothers, and therefore she was his sister. And it was common in that culture to have close relatives that got married. And so he didn't really lie, but he wasn't as forthcoming as he might have been. He was fearful, or was he just cautious, dealing in a culture that was, the Egyptians were very clear that Sarah ended up in the house of Pharaoh. She was a beautiful woman, and when it was expressed that she was his sister, they took her and married her to Pharaoh, or tried to marry her to Pharaoh. And they understand the laws of adultery, that's really a very large no-no spiritually, which is why it's one of the Esser Dibrotes, the do not commit adultery. But, the Pharaoh was upset. Abraham, why did you lie to me? If you told me the truth, we wouldn't have done anything. We wouldn't have taken her into our house. But the culture itself establishes that if a couple comes together, there were people who were murdered in order so the wives to be made available as a spouse. And we have the similar story in talking about Isaac and Rivka with Elimelech. And the difference in that story is that Elimelech considered his people above reproach. but his people didn't follow his ethics. He was a righteous person, and Elimelech was very clear. He would never have caused harm to enable himself to have access to a woman. But the people around him did not follow that. And so Isaac needed to protect himself. And he approached it in a similar way. So there are stories in the Tanakh that deal in the idea of lies as part of the teaching of what's acceptable and what's not.
What I'm seeing is a common thread is a necessity for concealment, not lies, but concealment in order to protect. That's what I'm seeing.
Ultimately, what is truth?
I'm sorry, you broke up. If that was a question, I'm not sure.
It is.
Okay.
Ultimately, truth is a revelation of wisdom.
You're still breaking up. I'm sorry.
Truth is the revelation of wisdom. Truth is the revelation of consistency, of the totality of knowledge, so that while we know certain things need to be concealed in order to be revealed, that revelation is what creates truth. If I don't know what's going on because it's concealed, I don't have access to truth. I'm separated from it because the wisdom is concealed from me.
Perhaps that's because it's connected to time, the proper time.
So,
for
the revelation, yes.
This is a really good subject, and I think we could go on for hours or days or years.
I was thinking that, and it's fine with me if you wish to continue, or we can stop it here and take up the Zohar. It's up to you all.
I was thinking that Zohar is good. I'd like to go there.
Well,
I've gotten enough of it. Go ahead.
Would you want to continue the discussion?
Did you have some more questions?
Oh, no. But I think this is cool. And sure, let's do the Zohar. But I love these discussions like this because it really, it's almost like a big study group and you learn a lot, you know?
Interaction is good.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, I'll go on mute and you're going to do the Zohar?
I'm going to do the Zohar.
Okay.
I'm going to put it in the range only I can be heard.
Okay.
Only I should be able to be heard at this point, and I'll open it up for questions after we've read a few verses. Starting with Zohar in the portion of Vayikra, it's section 41. It's titled The Six Combinations of Yud-Heh-Vav. And I remind you that if you don't have access to a Zohar, the Zohar is online at Kabbalah.com /K/. And that will bring you to a page where the Zohar is online, all of it. And if you choose the portion of Vayikra, number 41, this is where we're starting, verse number 281. And the first sentence that I say is actually a prayer that we say prior to studying Torah. Vayihi Noam Adonai Eloheinu aleinu maaseh yadeinu kunenei aleinu maaseh yadeinu kunenehu. Dehahu zimna inun shelamim hevan. V'sodin v'itzkeriyu kedashim delet temeim Benaihu Veod Shalamim Da Hashem Batra'a Deihu Shalimu De Amuda De Emsaita Bekol Havayot De Lilan Be Lekol Shit Sitrin Dile De Inun Shit Sufira'an. At that time, these living creatures and elements are peace offerings. They are called sacrifices, for none is defiled among them. Moreover, the peace offerings, called Shalamim, are last he of the name Yud-He-Vav-He, namely Malchut. It is the completion of the central pillar, Zeranpin, and with all the Yud-He-Vav-He's included within Zeranpin in its six extremities, the six sephirot, Chesed Gevurah Tiferet Netzach Hod and Yesod of Zeranpin. Zeranpin himself is the secret of Yud-He-Vav, of Yud-He-Vav-He, which comprises six permutations, as we said before, and the last He completes each permutation. It's a very esoteric discussion in this verse, and it's a different kind of metaphor. And the Zohar uses metaphors, and the Torah uses metaphors, and the Talmud uses metaphors. And it's trying to explain spiritual subjects with physical world, words and physical concepts, because human beings are physical, and we perceive the world with our physical senses. So what we're discussing is there's a metaphor called Yud-Ke Vav-Ke. It's also the name of Hashem. It represents energy. It represents the manifestation of the light of God. But this is all metaphors. And one of the techniques that was used at the time of the temple, and which most of the book of Leviticus, of the book of Vayikra, is talking about, are sacrifices. They're sacrifices of grains called meal offerings, and they're sacrifices of animals called burnt offerings or peace offerings. And the difference between a burnt offering and a peace offering is consciousness. And then there's the incense offering. And all of these sacrifices, all of these offerings, are techniques and physical tools to bring a human being closer to God. The burnt offering is done as a peace, not as a peace, as a correction of a negative action. A peace offering is done because you're happy. It's a Thanksgiving offering. But it represents the Malchut, the manifestation of the name Yud-Ke Vav-Ke. It represents the final He as a metaphor. And the way the Shlamim, the peace offering, was done is the animal was sacrificed, slaughtered in a ritual way that kept it kosher, and the blood was sprinkled on the Aron, the ark, and the animal was partially burned. Certain parts of it was given to the Kohen as payment, to the priest as payment, and other parts were cooked on the Mizbeach, under the ark. And then the happy participant, the man who brought the peace offering, had a party with his 50 closest friends. Because if you kill a bullock, you got a lot of food there. And so his 50 closest friends were invited to the party, because the offering must be eaten and can only be eaten in the precincts of Jerusalem. you couldn't pack it up and take it home, even if you lived only a day away and the meat wouldn't have spoiled. This is called holy meat, and it was consumed in the holy precincts. And it was a party. It was made everybody happy. This is a way to get closer to God. The highest level of offering is considered the shlamim, the peace offering. Viraza demila hatam rum ufana lamala vayud yudhevav lamina dechesed bechal behevav yud lismala bigvura vav heyud biamuda de emsaita yud vav hey benetzach bechod heyud vav biyasod veyud vav yud hey Ilana the Yahid Lone Kulhu Tiferet Et Ose Pri Uginda Mekom Shayipo Haetz Sham Yudhevav The Uf Haki Bekol Havaya Hashem Batra'a Shlamim La Ukol Havain Le Achidan Ba Kegavna Da Yudhevav Im Hashem Yud Kevavke Hevav Yud Im Hashem Havaya Vav Heyud Im Hashem Vehaya Uf Haki Shaar Havavkin. The secret of this, as was said in the Book of Formation, the Hebrew book, the Sefer Yetzirah, which we just spoke about earlier, is that he sealed the top and turned upwards to Yud Hey Vav on the right side, which is Chesed, which is the first permutation. Then he turned to Hey Vav Yud on the left side, Givura, the second permutation, to Vav Hey Yud on the central pillar, Tiferet, the third permutation, to Yud Vav Hey in Netzach, the fourth permutation, to He Yud Vav in Hod, the fifth permutation, to Vav Yud He in Yesod, the sixth permutation. The tree which connects them all is Tiferet, as Tiferet comprises all of the six directions. It is a fruit-bearing tree. Whenever the tree falls, there will be Yud Ke Vav, an allusion that Tiferet is called by the three letters, Yud Ke Vav alone, and the last He, Malchut, is connected to it. Therefore, its six directions are distinguished by the six permutations of Yud Ke Vav. Similarly, in every Yud Ke Vav He of the six directions, there is He as the last letter, a peace offering. Hebrewish Lamim to Yud Ke Vav Ke, as the last He completes. The Hebrew word is mashlemet, yud hey vav hey, and all the yud hey vav heys of the six directions are attached to it thus. Yud hey vav together with hey turns into yud hey vav hey. Hey vav yud together with hey is hey vav yud hey. Vav hey yud with hey is vav hey yud hey. So it is with the other yud hey vav heys. Maybe it sounds confusing, but it really isn't. If you have three letters, you have six combinations. If you have four letters, you have 24 combinations. Except that in Yud Ke Vav Ke, the Hays are the same. So there are actually 12 combinations of Yud Ke Vav Ke's if you permutate the letters, which is what is taught by the Sefer Yetzirah by the Kabbalists. What does it mean to permutate the letters? You have a word that is spelled Aleph Bet. It means, it's said Av, and it means father. The same letters in reverse order, called a permutation, is Bet Aleph. And it means bow, means come. So what is the relationship between father, Aleph Bet, and come, Bet Aleph? That's for another discussion. But the concept of permutations is very prevalent and very involved. And we are supposed to do that with our Hebrew words, both with our names and as well as with every word that is written in the Torah, is to be permutated in order to learn more and deeper levels of consciousness. And this verse is just describing that if we take the spiritual worlds using the metaphor of the Yud, the Ke, and the Vav, they need to be permutated. And when we permutate them and add the peace offering, which represents the final hay, we have the ability to have different consciousness, different energies, because the words that they spell are different. The Inun, Chet Yud, Advan, Deshit, Sitrin, Diklilan, Betzadik Chai, Almin, Ve'im Hashem Itaved, Chaya, Ve'razad Mila Ihi Hashem, Kigon, Tebat Noach, Deit Kenish Ba, Mikol Min, Umin De Inun, Shinaim, Shinaim, Shiva, Shiva, Lekarbana. Shinaim, Shinaim, Arba'a, Shiva. Shiva, Arba'a, Asar. Ha, Yudchet, Veteva, He, Ba, Ishtalim, Chaya. The six permutations of Yud-Ke-Vav consist of 18 letters of the six directions. Chesed, Gevurah, Tiferet, Netzach, Chod, and Yesod. Included in the righteous, the life, the Hebrew word for life is chai, which has a gematria of 18. The life of the worlds, who is yesod of Zeranpin. Together with hey, malhut, it becomes chaya, literally animal. The mystery of this is hey, such as the Ark of Noah, malhut, in which every kind was gathered two and two, and seven of the animals for offering. Two and two are four, seven and seven are 14, and together they are 18, the Hebrew word chai. The ark itself is he, being malchut. Thus the word chaya, chet yud he, is completed. All of this is metaphors describing different levels of energy, different levels of consciousness that are achieved from the same letters, that are achieved from the same words of Torah. Noah brought into the ark every animal two by two, except the kosher animals were brought seven by seven. And the explanation is that they were to be used, the additional animals over the two, was to be used as sacrifices. The Tzadiki Hu Kalil Vav Dargin Devagid Takinu Lemiftar Bei Chelma Begimel Shlomot Begimel Pidyonot Dehu Vav Bechushban Vav Dehu Sulam Dechelma Yaakov Kalil Vav Safiran Mutzav Arza Shekinta Tata'a V'da Hashem Tata'a V'rosho Dayud Be Yehu Tzadik Shavi'i Magia Hashemaima Da Ima Ila'a V'da Hashem Ila'a Demisitra Dechelma Hashem Shalta La'al Yud Dehu Resha Desul Kma Heyud min Helokim Uvginda Vehine Malake Elohim, Olim v'gomer v'la malake, Yudalad vavdalad. The righteous Yesod is comprised of six grades, namely six directions, for which reason it has been decreed that the bettering of a bad dream is it performed with three times peace, three verses in which peace is mentioned, and three ransoms, three verses in which ransom is mentioned. For Yesod is Vav, and they together amount to six, corresponding to the six grades of Yesod. As the bettering of a bad dream is done through Yesod, it is the latter in Jacob's dream which comprises six Sefirot. It is set up on the earth, Bereshit chapter 28, namely the lower Shekinah, Malchut, called earth, the last hay, and the top is Yud, of which the righteous Yesod is seventh. It reached a heaven to supernal Ema. This is the supernal hay, namely Bina, of the side of the dream, which is the aspect of the left. He rules over Yud, which is the top of the ladder, which is the secret of Eyud, of Elohim. Hence the angels of Elohim ascending and descending on it. Bereshit chapter 28. Not the angels of Yudke Vavke. Atvan besidran olim becholla. I will come back to this verse. Becholem dihu keter al dalet atvan deitpashatuta dilchon mechachma ad malchut kadisha begin dechachma ihiyud binahe shit sefiran vav malchut he batra ah cholem keter al kol atvan. Al kach raye mehemna. The letters arranged properly, yud he vav he, ascend through the dot of cholam, which is the vowel that makes an O sound, which is cheter, above them. The four letters expand from hachma to holy malchut. As hachma is yud, bina is he, the six sefirot, chesed, gevurah, tiferet, netzach, chod, and yesod, are vav. Vav has a gematria of six. And malchut is the last he. The cholam is a crown on all the letters. The cholam is a dot above the letters. It's usually associated with the vav with a dot above it as a vowel. It's just different metaphors talking about how we are to perceive the world and utilize the letters in order to change the world. The Sefer Yetzirah teaches us how to change the physical world through the consciousness of our minds and the power of the Hebrew letters. And there are people teaching how to build a golem these days. There are people teaching how to expand and become someone who can manipulate the level of consciousness associated with physicality and change it. We have many stories of our Sadiqim, the Baal Shem Tov, would get in his carriage with his students, and his carriage was literally a wagon being pulled by a team of six horses, driven by the same driver each time. But the driver never faced forward, he only faced back. And the Baal Shem Tov would utilize one of the 72 names, and he would shorten the way. It's the term, the translation of the term. And literally, he'd travel hundreds and thousands of miles across the domain of Russia and the Ukraine and all the different parts of Eastern Europe and the Russian Commonwealth, as he experienced incident after incident, as he taught his students different aspects of Torah. But he would do that by shortening the way. The horses would ride, and they would leave at noon on a Friday afternoon and arrive 1,000 miles away by 2 o'clock in the afternoon. How was it done? Using the 72 names, using the techniques of the Sefer Yetzirah. Can it be done today? There are people in this world who know, have this wisdom. They don't promote it, they don't embellish it, they don't present it as being knowledgeable, because it's not there for their ego. It's there as a tool from Hashem. And they have the merit to be given this tool, to learn this tool. They were not given this tool to publicize it for their ego gratification. That is the end of section 41. It's also the end of the section of the Reaya Mechemna, which is the section that Moses was speaking. And the next section, 42, is a little bit too long to finish tonight. So I'm going to again turn it back for questions. To unmute yourself, you may need to star six. Try speaking. Any questions?
Not right at the moment, but thank you so much for all your answers earlier. I appreciate that.
But we will be teaching next week, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday night again. The following week is, following week is Pesach Wednesday and also Thursday night, so we won't be teaching those nights. But I do want to make an announcement that we are having a Kabbalistic speaker for the second night in the Los Angeles area. The cost of the Seder is, I believe it's $75 per person or $126 for a couple. Children are half price under the age of 12, and they are free under the age of 3. And it will be a Kabbalistic Seder. It will have the Kavanah and the consciousness of the best of our ability, bringing order into our lives. I highly recommend it. I highly recommend that you recognize that the normal family Seder just leads to arguments. Most families, most people, don't know the truth behind the holiday of Pesach. They see it as a family tradition and a celebration of the redemption from Egypt. But it's actually a celebration of our own redemption from our own desire to receive for oneself alone and being giving us the energy to keep in balance so that we receive in order to share. Before I wish you Shabbat Shalom, does anybody have any questions? Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom.